while ago, I couldn't find one, because I know me and him ain't going to get the same.
No, no.
No,
I'm going to get
Is there another mic?
Jump over where I start first. I'd still like to make a statement about that bird, though.
What were you going to say, Brian?
Well, about the fella one time I told him about the bird dog. Told it cost, like he said, $1,800.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't ever going to turn him loose in the woods. He's always talking about a regular dog, you know.
Okay, we're about ready to get started for our final workshop, but there's another event right after this. The Culberth family from Cortez will be performing their fine string band music for you here in about 20 minutes' time. This workshop involves commercial fishermen from different parts of the state, and the topic of the workshop is continuity and change, how things have changed over the course of their careers. And I think it might be interesting and enlightening to talk about their opinions of prospects for the future of the fishing industry. We've been talking about a lot of different traditional activities, and in the earlier workshop, I think yesterday, we talked about how some of these traditions are threatened and how a way of life that these men all value, it's all important to them in their lives, and I think most of them would like to carry it on and to pass it on. How this way of life is threatened by a variety of forces. So we'll touch on some of these things, I think. But first, let me introduce our participants. On the far right from Crescent City is Tommy Knowles, who was up here earlier today discussing how he makes different types of fish traps that he uses in his fishing activities. Next to him is our aerialist, Ken Folsom, who has been up on the scaffolding demonstrating extremely well how oyster tongs are used. And even though I went out oystering with Ken last fall and spent, must have been a 14 or 15 hour day with him, his very fine explanation out of the water taught me much more than I even learned that day just by seeing the operation of the tongs. Next to Ken is Glenn Philman, who I've come to learn is one of the finest storytellers that I've ever met. One heck of a talker. I think you'll agree if you've joined us in any of the other workshops involving storytelling. And finally, last but not least, as we say, Lawrence Bennett from Wilatka, the St. John's River area, a freshwater fisherman. So we've got two saltwater fishermen and two freshwater fishermen. And we've got, two generations here, too. So I think we've got a pretty good representation here. So first of all, Tommy, I'd like to start by asking you just some observations about how fishing has changed from your dad's generation to yours.
A lot of changes have gone on since my dad fished. When my dad started fishing, he started fishing on a haul seine. That's a long net that you put out and you pull the net together, and you keep pulling it down into a smaller and smaller circle till the fish are tightened up into a tight wad. Then you bag them and dip them out into the boat. That method was prohibited in late 40s, early 50s. From that time, when they prohibited the haul seines, my dad shifted over to the wire fish traps, and that's the trap, the catfish trap that I have over there, one of them. He started fishing those, and at that time he started fishing them, the limit that he could fish was 30 traps. That's all he was allowed to fish. Now I can fish 80 traps, but the production is up. But the water is changing. The bottom of the lake where I fish, it's changing. Areas that he fished in his fishing career was as clean as this floor up here with blue marl clay. And now that same bottom I'm fishing has anywhere from maybe 10 to 14 inches of silt on top of it, fine mud silt. And it's not just that particular area, it's all over the lake. So I've seen a decline in the water quality and grasses around the edge of the lake, no longer there. Different species of of fish and mollusks in the lake are no longer there. So it's changing.
Now, Ken, I know that your fishing career is perhaps not as lengthy as some of the other fellows around here. You've been oystering how long now?
About eight years.
Okay. But I'm sure, like most everyone else in other occupations, you've been able to sense certain changes and trends in your oystering industry. Can you tell us a little bit about your observations there?
Well, some of the biggest change that have affected people that oyster for a living is the state legislature, of course, because when a few generations ago, or even as little as, say, 10 or 15 years ago, rain was something good for an oysterman, because any time we had a large amount of rain, the oysters became fat. And when an oyster's fat from the fresh water, you can take a bag of oysters and shuck out a gallon of oysters. And a lot of oyster people get paid by how much they shuck out. But when the oysters are salty and poor, you're lucky to get a half a gallon out of that same bag. And what's happened is the legislature has made laws now that when it rains, the bay automatically closes after a certain amount of rainfall. So it's virtually killed the shucking industry in Apalachicola, because you just can't make any money at it anymore. So now, back then where they used to catch oysters to shuck, now basically most of the oysters caught in Apalachicola Bay are caught for the half-shell market, because you just can't make any money shucking oysters anymore. And not only that, most of the water in the state of Florida, you're prohibited to oyster in, because the state of Florida has grown so much that pollution has moved in, and it's virtually killed most of the oyster industry in Florida. Apalachicola Bay is one of the exceptions because it's so protected. So that's another way it's changed. One of the biggest ways fishing has changed for most everybody here, I bet, would be outboard motors. Because back in the old days in Apalachicola Bay, the way they got to the oyster bar is that they used a long pole. And sometimes they'd pole as long as 4 or 5 miles out to the oyster bar, fighting the tide and the wind and currents. And, you know, all I've got to do is ride out there with an outboard motor. So that's a definite advantage over the older people. And some of them, on some of the bigger bars, like from East Point to Cat Point, which is real close to East Point, Florida, they had actually had poles stuck out into the bar all the way to East Point with a rope tied to it, and they'd pull themselves out across the bar to get to the oyster bar. So you can see the outboard motors made a big change in the oyster industry. Another thing that's changed the oyster industry is a lot more people are doing it. A lot more people have come to Florida. So where it used to be an old time where he would average about 100 bags a day of oysters with no problem. It was just go out and catch 100 bags, and I'm lucky to catch 15. So you can see that's been another big change within the oyster industry, is trying to support the number of people doing it. And besides for that, it's all about the same as it was 100 years ago. Yeah, we have to have, well, most commercial fishermen have to have, I've got to have a health card in order to get an oyster permit, so there's two permits right there. Then I have to have a commercial permit for my boat. Then I have to have a saltwater products license. So there's four permits right there I have to have to be able to oyster.
What was the rationale for the legislature shutting oyster
beds
down in the rain?
No, they use a... They take water samples from the bay, and they say when the runoff from the land runs into the bay, the bacteria count rises. But the only problem with that is, what they first off, they take the samples from the top of the water, and the oysters are under the water. And second off, they sample for a bacteria called Fecha cola. And Fecha cola is a bacteria that's not harmful to warm-blooded animals. It's in the water you drink out of your city water system, so, you know, it's prevalent. But all that indicates is that the conditions are right for other bacteria to be in the water. So they've never, and like in Apalachicola Bay, they've never found any harmful bacteria. They're basically closing it just in case.
Okay. Yeah, another question?
Do you fish at a certain fish house, like you fish one certain person, or do you take anybody?
I'm a completely independent businessman. Now, I've sold my oysters to the same man for 4 years, but that's only because he pays the highest price, and he gives me the most benefits of any other dealer in the county. So, but if he lowered his price too much, or I got upset with him for some reason, I just wouldn't sell him my oysters.
I know that with commercial fishermen, sometimes there's a cutoff. You know, you can't take your fish. Sometimes they won't let you do four or something like that. Have you had that problem? Sometimes they won't
send you about maybe four or five times a year, but it's not enough to matter.
Okay.
But some depends. Some people that work for other fish houses, that's a constant problem. It's more of who you work for or sell to, I should say.
Now, Glenn, what are the major changes you've seen over the course of your fishing career?
David, I've seen them, you know, a lot of changes. We've come, in other words, I'm talking, you know, with 57 years, that's how old I am, and I've been working as a commercial fisherman since I was 14 and a half years old. A lot of changes, and like they've been talking about, pollution is, I guess, number one, you know, of our problems that we're facing today as far as marine life. David, we've got another situation that I'd like to touch on, and it's kind of hard, but, you know, everything today is, I like to stand up, I don't like to sit down when I'm talking, but every day, everything today, I believe you'll agree with me, is political motivated. It ain't what you know or what's best, you know, it's who you know. And what bothers me more than anything else as far as marine life is concerned, I've been before the MFC on several occasions. And when I'm talking about the MFC, I'm talking about the Marine Fisheries Commission that was appointed by Governor Graham back 2-3 years ago. Am I talking somewhere about that? But what I'm trying to establish and get to, in other words, every rule and regulation now that's put on marine life out there is not passed or governed, it's passed, all right, but not governed by our legislatures that we elect. And that bothers me because we can't go out there and sit down with our people, our representatives, our senators, our people that we elect to do the job. We can't sit down and reason with them and say, now, we feel like this is the best for conservation as far as marine life is concerned. We work with it every day. And I assure you, you see this hat I'm wearing, I belong to the Organized Fishermen of Florida. And we go a long ways, well, all the way, towards doing what we feel like is best for the survival of marine life. So what I'm trying to say is, in these, there's 7 people on this board that was appointed, there's 5 voting power, in which you have Connor Davis, he's the director, kind of the man, you know, at Ramrod's a lot of the stuff. But anyhow, the chairman of this board, I won't call his name, that's, you know, you can find out, but he has made the statement to me several times that everything has got to give way to Florida growth. I don't agree with this. In other words, our farmers are going out of business because they can't make enough to stay in business. And if we let something destroy our marine life and completely put the commercial man out of business, in other words, I wonder where we're going as far as having something to eat, you know. It'll be everything, and when you're talking about marine life, will be imported. The quality cannot be there. It's going to cost us more money. But I tell you what, I believe that our power as far as putting our rules and laws and regulations should be back with our people that we elect, and let's work for the benefit of the species, whatever it is. In other words, we're talking about redfish or we're talking about trout or whatever it might be. Let's work for the benefit of the species, not for a commercial fisherman or for a sport fisherman or whatever. In other words, let's try to keep everything as pure as we can when we're talking about pollution. And let's do everything in our power, and we need y'all's input on all this because we're only a producer. And y'all are people that we're trying to get the product to out there, and we want y'all to have it. And we want y'all to have the best product that we can put to you. And we realize that you have to have conservation. You have to be governed by rules and regulations to be able to do this. But I want to be one to say, even though this is my living, if whatever it needs to be done as far as conservation to see that, you know, we don't have in the state of Florida, I don't know of any place where we have where we grow redfish or we grow trout and we return them back to the water. That's something that needs to be started in the state of Florida. In other words, I kind of told a story today about commercial fishing, you know, not never putting back into the water, always taking. But whatever it takes, let's all pay the price and let's go in the hatcheries and raise, if we got a shortage of redfish or mackerel, whatever it might be, let's all chip in and spend a few bucks and try to get nurses out there. And if there's a shortage, let's try to put something back in the waters that we're taking stuff out of. And in other words, trying to work together as fishermen, as consumers, as sport fishermen, or whatever we might be. You know, I'm afraid I've got some grandchildren walking around here that's very small. I don't know where we're headed. I don't really know where we're headed. But, in other words, it don't look good to me as far as the seafood industry. But I'm just as honest. I've been here 3 days of shooting a bull and telling stories and all this. But I'm just as serious as a heart attack now, and that's serious. But let's all get together and pull for whatever is best for the species, and if it falls to my advantage, well, good luck to me. And if it falls best to your advantage, good luck to you. But let's all work together.
You wouldn't want to take it.
Right. You know, like I say, I don't know what the answer is. I only have a 10 and a half grade education, but I got sense enough to know that if we continue to pollute, and where I live, they talk about pollution. Where I live, in other words, the pulpwood companies. When I'm talking about pulpwood companies, I'm talking about Georgia Pacific, Buckeye Cellulose. They own 75% of all the land in 5 joining counties. They are not, they may say, they are not interested in seafood. They're interested in growing pine, and I can take you where I live to Seaton if we can get there in time. If we don't, I'll take you there tonight. And they're canaling their property, running it into our rivers, going out into our bays, and they're interested in growing pine now. I'm being just as honest as I can be, because that's number one. They're in the pulpwood business. But all of this is killing our marine life. And whatever it takes, you know, to put a damper on things that are being done, and I know and you know that it takes clean water or half-decent water for marine life to survive in. Now, the only thing I know of that I like to see real muddy water is stone crabbing. In other words, when we have real muddy water, I catch more stone crabbing. I'm not talking about pollution now. I'm talking about muddy water where, when it blows 30 miles an hour, it muds the water. But it's the nature of the product that I produce that he moves in, because that's when he catches his food and all that's in muddy water. I've touched on a lot of things here that I tell you what, it's real serious as far as marine life. And I'm talking from the bottom of my heart, and I'd repeat it to anybody what I've said. And together, you know, instead of getting up there and fighting for this organization and that organization or whatever, and I assure you this cap that I'm wearing is Organized Fishermen of Florida, and that is what we're interested in, is to conserve or to do whatever we have to do to have the product out there, the seafood product, and to bring to you the best quality that we can possibly get to you. You know, I've sat up here and took probably this whole thing, you know, but...
And answering to one of that lady's questions, too, about fish, any oysterman that I know, even back when the hurricane hit Apalachicola Bay, really, honestly, I don't want to take anything that I haven't earned. I don't want to take money from the federal government. I want to go out and make my own living and my own money. All I ask is the federal and state government allow me to go out and make, but I wouldn't feel right if I got a check for $2,000 a month for not oystering. It just wouldn't sit right with me, and most fishermen are that way.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you put a closed season on it, and you
guys
get compensated for it.
Oh, yeah. Can I answer
We've got about 1 minute left, because I know the call bursts are ready to come on. There's a lot of other people want to hear some music here. It's a very complicated issue. There are a lot of opinions, and as Glenn has said, it's a heartfelt concern for fishermen and other people. It's not anything we're going to solve in a 20-minute workshop.
Right.
Okay, you can take about a minute if you can, Lawrence, because we got to get out of here. But well, we can continue this discussion.
Where
elsewhere.
I live in Willacka, there we have a fish hatchery there, and the federal government has cut the funds down on the hatchery product. And this touches back to the same situation Glenn was talking about—a restocking program. And I'll agree with him 100% on everything he said. That everybody needs to pull together to make the product. I don't fish anymore. I'm retired now. I had to retire. But I'll agree with him and these other guys 100% that something needs to be done. And if we're going to look to the future and for the little fellas coming up, and God bless them, they're our future. If we don't look out for them little fellas, they won't have a future. And I'm for anything to help to preserve our maritime system.
Okay.
And I thank you
Amen
for letting
to
me
that.
Speak to you.
Okay, well, hurriedly, we have to conclude here because we do have the Culbers coming on. And I think Tommy Knowles and Ken Folsom and Glenn Fillman and Lawrence Bennett would all agree with me when I say that next time you have a fish burger at McDonald's or you go down to your seafood market and buy a pint of oysters, think about the men and the women and their families from the different coastal communities here in Florida and the inland freshwater communities where commercial fishing and other maritime activities have been a way of life for generations. Thank you all.
Thank you.